Michael Jordan, Michael Phelps, Kobe Bryant, Tom Brady. Guys, a lot of these athletes are great, but behind them are some of the greatest coaches, distilling 10,000 hours in film, in books, in experimenting on themselves, experimenting on athletes, the losses, the success. And today I get to interview probably one of the most prolific MMA coaches out there in our era right now. And I'm excited to have our guest here with me, Coach Eric Nixick. Welcome, man.
Thanks, Royce. Thanks for having me, bro.
Dude, I am pumped. So Joe got me to, I was like, all right, who is this guy? Because he was like, dude, he's just like you. He's obsessed about coaching.
Yeah.
And I'm always pumped to meet another coach that is slightly obsessed about what they do. I think it requires a special person to be kind of where you are.
No, I appreciate you, man. Yeah. I mean, for me, I come from a long line of coaching lineage, you know,
my
dad, my uncles. So I was around coaching my entire life. So being on the football field, 2-3 years old, you know, all the way up, I was around some of the most incredible coaches at the high school level. And then, you know, my dad's uncle, my great uncle, was the head coach for the Cleveland Browns, Washington Redskins. So like, man, coaching was always in my blood.
Yeah, I love that. So I want to go right into this because the big topic is coaching greatness. Mm. And I've been in this like training world for quite a long time, PT 24 Hour Fitness, started this gym. But one of the big things, I remember when I was a trainer that I started getting some of these big athletes. I started to get entrepreneurs. I started to get actors. I started to even get a few professional athletes. And then one trainer came in and was like, how come he's getting all of the best athletes? And she eventually quit. But I wanted to unpack that. How are you able to get, I mean, these guys can do these research. Just type in Eric Nixick. You'll find them everywhere. How are you able to get 40 plus professional athletes? Some of them are, a bunch of them are champions. How do you think you've navigated and attracted that level of talent to you, one, and then to your team?
I think you have to be able to kind of change your outlook. Or my dad always said, like, to be a good coach, you have to have like a ball of janitor keys, right? And you have to have certain keys to open certain doors. Mm-hmm. Everybody learns differently. Everybody is taught differently. Everyone, you know, their approach might be different. Hell, why they even get into this sport that we're doing? So as a coach, you're going to have to try to find ways to tap in to be able to connect with that particular fighter. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of great coaches are afraid to kind of step outside of who and what they are. Now, don't change your standard. Keep your standard the same. But your approach might have to become different. You might have to, for example, Francis Ngannou, he has to understand the reasons why behind the technique.
Right.
Right? So if I tell him, hey, Francis, I want you to throw this particular combination, but I don't explain to the reasons why, it's not going to resonate with him.
Yeah.
But if I say, hey, man, I need you to throw this because it's going to negate level change and you're going to stymie Stipe Miocic's wrestling, or you're going to do this, you're going to do that. So he understands the purposes behind it. Then it resonates with him. Mm-hmm. Then he's more apt to do it correctly, right? Then there's guys like Sean Strickland, just a complete wild man who doesn't really take to coaching very well, but you have to coach him in spurts.
Yes.
But it's the way you coach him, the way you're able to talk to him in certain situations that is going to stick with him. Dan Ige, he's a film study guy. You're going to sit down and you're going to go over repetitions over and over and over where he does it time and time again. So to answer your question, I think as a coach, keep your standard and certain things that you need to have, but you also have to be able to kind of be a chameleon and fit to the needs of that particular athlete time to time.
I love that answer.
Yeah.
So guys, if you're not listening to this guy right now, I'm telling you, he's one of the most prolific coaches because he's able to communicate things at entirely different levels. And you can tell just the obsession that you have between like how they move as athletes and how they're coached and how they're wired in their whys.
Mm-hmm.
The level of obsession, I think, is also attracting these athletes that are obsessed in their own fields.
Correct.
I think one of the low-hanging fruits that trainers need to know is like if you want to train some of those highest level clients, you got to be them. You got to become a professional like them.
Right.
I mean, you might not be doing the same movements of them, but I don't know how many countless of hours of videos you've watched with some of your athletes and then some of your opponents. Can you explain how much work you do on that end?
I mean, you nailed it. It becomes an obsession. So, mm-hmm. Tape study just becomes a part of who and what you are. Now, take it one step further. It's also a great way to know what's going on in your field,
yeah,
and show growth. Don't yeah. be so fixated on your particular fighters or your opponents,
yeah,
that because you're missing out on a lot of study. So, yeah. for example, like Volkanovski's fighting tonight. He's a great guy that maybe I'll never corner against, maybe I'll never train with, but you can learn a lot from Volkanovski by plugging in the tape, you know, and watching what other people are doing. So I always kind of use the analogy of like, if you're a sniper, you're only fixated on the target, but there's a lot of things going on in the environment that's changing, right? That's why you always have a spotter, somebody there to kind of help you. And that to me is like when you're tape study on other people that maybe you'll never even fight, or plug in an old tape of Fedor, or plug in an old tape of Dan Henderson. There's so much out there now as far as resources go that I think that like there's no excuse for you not to be able to learn. Back when I first started, you had VHS tapes, maybe some DVDs, right? Yeah. And guys were so like too proud to buy or pay for that because it was like a sign that you weren't smart. And I used to think to myself, man, I used to go to coaching clinics with my dad. From high school level, we go to colleges because they'd open the door. And how do you run the pistol? How do you run the run and shoot? How do you do this? And all these high school coaches would flock to these colleges, and these college coaches would go to the NFL. So why wouldn't you do that in MMA? But it was like a pride thing. So coming over from football, it didn't matter to me. I was like, no, I want to learn. I want to be the best at what I do, but I want to see what the best are doing out there. How do I grow? How do I expand on that stuff? So that's my biggest thing, man, is like I love tape study. Fall asleep to it every night, you know?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So there's another lesson that you just distilled there. You've went so deep in mastery inside the football that you are able to apply that mastery into what you're doing now. There's this big frustration for me. I'll have coaches. You have a bunch of coaches. They're like, what cert should I get next? What cert should I get next? I was like, do the one that you have, but like dig deep and find all of the principles, all of the masteries, and then add something to it.
Right.
You know, I think it blends really well. Like you have these athletes that are prolific in stand up.
Right.
In Brazilian jiu-jitsu or maybe wrestling. When is it okay to be like, let's add this to your game now?
Man, it's such a great topic because in this sport, you're right. Like, you'll get guys that will come in that'll be specialty guys that get into MMA.
Yeah.
A lot of them will be kickboxers, right? And what you'll find is they work on something that they're already so damn good at, right? And what is the return on investment when you're working on, like you'll see guys that are kickboxers, world class, and all they do is hit pads.
Yes.
Do you think you're going to get maybe 1% better in a 12-month span on, you're already great, you're already world class at it.
Yeah.
But now if we can work on these other things and start bridging that gap, you're going to see leaps of growth in your game by working on the things that you're not comfortable with doing, right? Yeah. So with Francis, when he came over, okay, we sat down just like this to a meal. Tell me what you're afraid of. Mm-hmm. Dude, what are you afraid of? Like, you're the baddest man on the planet. You knocked out everybody, you know.
It's massive, yeah.
You're scary, you're this, you're that. What are you afraid of? Mm-hmm. Well, my cardio, my wrestling. Okay, great. So now if we didn't work on one thing that had to do with your striking, do you think you're still going to hit hard? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. Okay, let's start working on the things that you feel like we can help bridge the gap.
Yeah.
Because when you lost to Stipe, right, that feelings you had of like incompetent, inept, like I can't wrestle, I can't do this. Now in 2.5-3 years, we're going to work on this thing. So when we fight this dude again, you're completely evolved. You're a whole different fighter.
Yeah.
Are you down with that? Yep. I'm down with that. You know, so you need the athlete to respond correctly to the right answers as well. Yeah. But man, for me, like you see it time and time again, people just are afraid to work on the things that they really should get better at. You know, I see this a lot in our sparring. Here's what happens. Guys want to win at sparring. They want to win at practice.
Wow.
Instead of doing what?
Work on their weaknesses.
Work on your weaknesses. Now, there's times and places for that. When you're in camp, of course, Royce, I want you to work on the things that we have camp specific to win our fight. There's things I want you to do. when you're outside of camp, nothing matters anymore.
Yeah.
So why aren't we working on the things for us to get better, mm-hmm. right? Instead of, oh, I didn't win my round today. Did mm-hmm. you get paid for that round? Did that round matter? Did you care? But the ego inside of a lot of us, especially in this field, is this macho machismo.
I'm always going to win.
I got to win yeah. practice. Why? This mm-hmm. is the best time for you to try out your southpaw, mm-hmm. to work your judo, to try this, to try that, to put yourself in a position to where maybe you grow so much in that off season, if you will,
yeah.
that we can now apply that into your camp season.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And guys, this is why this guy's winning so much. Because you think you have an edge on him because you've watched 1,000 films on Francis Ngannou and how he knocks people out. But then you've also found a way to be like, hey, what are your weaknesses? And you've decided that one of the biggest values for coaching for me is asking the question.
Yeah.
And then when they decide that that's what they need to work on, it makes it so much more powerful for them to actually go all in.
100%. You know, that's, I think, when it really becomes like a beautiful moment, mm-hmm. right? When a guy commits himself or herself to the improvements of what they know deep down they need to get better at, yeah. right? And you know what? It sucks because we all want to be great at whatever that thing is, and we don't want to show weakness. Mm-hmm. We don't want to have to show vulnerability to improvement.
Yeah.
But when you master those things, and this is exactly the conversation I had with Francis.
Yeah.
And I said, I looked right at him. I said, the term was like, what is your boogeyman? What are you afraid of? Mm-hmm. What lives underneath your bed?
Yeah.
And those were the things that he said. And then the exact conversation was, well, what happens if you conquer the boogeyman? He said, well, I'm the baddest motherfucker on the planet.
Wow.
There you have
it. That's it.
There you have it. So what did we do for the last 2 years behind the mm-hmm. scenes? Worked on cardio, worked yeah. on wrestling, did all the things that made him feel vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we kept winning our fights emphatically with knockouts.
Right.
But everybody never saw, no one ever saw what we did yeah. behind the scenes until we fought Ciryl Gane.
Right.
And that's when it kicked in and they're like, oh shit, this mm-hmm. guy can actually wrestle, right? Yeah. So how do you make it fun for the guy? Mm-hmm. Something that he tells you he hates so, so much, right? Mm-hmm. I hate wrestling. I don't want to do it. Okay, well, here's my theory. Let's make you an offensive wrestler. Let's right. teach you how to take people down and beat them up.
Yeah.
You don't like getting taken down and getting up. That part's mm-hmm. tiring. But if we could teach you how to take people down and then beat them up, right?
Yeah.
What are you doing to the mind? Essentially, you're reverse engineering the whole entire thing. If I could teach you how to take somebody down,
yeah,
you should also know how to get yourself back up, right?
I love it. Yeah.
Because you have to reverse engineer. So if I'm teaching you, we're teaching you offensive wrestling, inherently you're going to learn defensive wrestling.
Yeah.
Because if you could take the car engine apart, you could put it back together.
I love it.
Right? So hey man, let's make this wrestling fun. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, what's Francis doing every camp? Taking dudes down and beating the crap out of them.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, dude, we got to let this guy back up because it's a TKO. You can't let it. Then what do? Get back up, throw a couple hands, boom, shoot a double leg, yeah. take a guy back down. So it turned yeah. into something that he loved.
You make it enjoyable for them.
You have to. You have yeah. to.
So I study a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
And I'm studying you. And there's something that I think some of the best coaches that they have. One, they're confident like Superman. Mm-hmm. I think you have that. Right. Another thing, they think like Einstein. And then the third one is they can speak like a third grader. So they can distill that knowledge
right.
and that information that you have in your head to a person that's right in front of you, which right. makes you, I think, dangerous. And I think that's why you won all of these coaches of the years. Your clients continually win championships all the time. How important is communication in your sport?
Huge. Huge for me.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's important to be connected, you know, with your athletes on a daily basis at the very least. And sometimes just feeding positive reinforcements in a time when you feel like they're down or, you know, even if they're not. Mm-hmm. But the communication level that I have with like Danny Ige and my athletes, I mean, it's honestly, it's daily.
Yeah.
And I want them to feel like that. I want them to feel like we're in this together. So mm-hmm. not only the communication side of things, but being there, being present. And mm-hmm. there's things that I like to do that I know most coaches don't, but I don't do it. I do it because I want to have an edge, of course, but I do it because I want the fighter to feel like I'm in the trenches with them. I go to their strength and conditioning sessions and I'm in there with them.
Wow.
Like I want to do S&C with my guys. So when it's, you know, 2-2 going into round 5 or 1-1 going into round 3 and we're on the stool and I'm telling you that I believe in you, it's not hearsay. It's not, okay, I know this guy believes in me. No, I've been in the trenches with you, sweating, dying, on the air dying, at your practices, at your sparring. It's not just some dude telling you that I believe in you.
On the side.
Sweat equity, man. Like we've been in that shit together. That's when I feel like that bond really, really, really meets, you know, is that little bit of extra incentive. So communication, yes, of course, but then your actions, I think, have a lot more to do with it.
That's amazing. So there's this thing that I have a professional football player.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are squatting 405, deadlifting 405, not just one time, but they're doing it for reps.
Yeah.
And you're probably dealing with arguably the 1% of the 1% of fittest athletes in the world. Right. And they're the strongest athletes in the world. How do you like get them to work out even harder? At least part of my skill was like, okay, I can get all these athletes to kind of where I'm at.
Right.
Right. But then you get this handful that they're on another planet. You got Francis Ngannou is probably insanely strong.
Right.
Right. And you have athletes that are extremely conditioned to a point where you're like, I can't even keep up with these guys. How do you lead that environment in terms of just like getting them even stronger that you've never seen before?
I mean, honestly, the guys that we have are some of the most self-motivated group and I love that part about it, especially because I've been in the sport for 16, 17 years now.
Mm-hmm.
You used to have to ride guys about their cardio and their strength and conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's became just second nature as a part of what you do anyway, that you don't really have to ride them anymore.
Yeah.
But what I love about it is that it's kind of an unwritten code amongst us all where you see what Aljamain Sterling's doing and Francis and these other guys that are championship levels, but they're leading by example. So it's not hard to just go and point at them. Right? For the young kids, coach, how do I get to this? And you're like, oh, practice is over, but Francis is doing 45 minutes of jump rope to work on his footwork.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
It's so nice when you don't have to explain it. You just go, right? Mm-hmm. Check it out right there. Oh, Aljamain, check it out. Look at him on the treadmill. Kai Kamaka, Jeremy Kennedy, Danny Ige. They're always doing a little bit extra. And I love that because it plays to the level of competition.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you don't do that, what goes through your head? Well, maybe my next opponent is doing the work that I should be doing right now.
Yeah.
So it's self-motivating for these guys to go out and get the work done. I don't have to do a whole lot of like riding or pushing or this or that. But this is the sport where the one thing that you can control is your cardio.
Right.
You can control your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You can control your cardio.
Mm-hmm.
When COVID hit, that was the first thing Randy Couture said to all of us in the gym. Boys, we all come in. He said, I don't know what the hell's going to happen. We don't know the gym, this and this. Your perspective and your cardio, no one can tell you, can't tell you, you can't go outside and run.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You can't work out. You can't do this. You are in control of those things. So I'll never forget that speech. And guys, I had guys riding their bike from North Las Vegas to the gym.
Oh my gosh.
To the gym to make sure that they're doing the extra work to get their cardio in.
Yeah.
So that this is a beautiful time for us now. Now, this is the funny thing, Royce, is like I got to tell guys that rest is your most important workout of the day.
Yeah.
Right? Like when did that happen? Like, dude, take some time off. Yeah. Your body needs a rest.
I have a coach that was like one of my biggest mentors, and he told me, I asked him a question. I was like, what's the hardest part of the session? He was like, it's not in the hour. It's the other 23 hours.
Right.
How do you influence that? And if you can influence that, you're going to be the most dangerous coach that's out there.
Yeah. So we'll always sit down. I know where every one of my fighters is at, especially during camp.
Right.
Pre-camp, we sit down and I every time, lay me out your schedule.
Yeah.
I want to see what your ideal schedule is like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Then I'll go through and kind of p- pick and choose and move things and say, this is too much, this is not enough, we have too much of this, not enough of that. Mm-hmm. Everywhere that they're at, I can tell you, okay, Danny Ige's here at one, I know this guy's doing this. And furthermore, know the strength and conditioning coaches, know who they are.
Wow.
And make sure that they're on board with what your vision is, right? Because you have coaches that are very accomplished strength and conditioning coaches.
Right.
But do they understand what the game plan is? Mm-hmm. Right? Do they understand what you need to get done from this with this athlete? Are they overtraining your athlete? So do they understand that, hey, this strength and conditioning session on Monday morning, but he has a Monday practice that's a 10, mm-hmm. that this is going to be super, super difficult and super hard, mm-hmm. right? So getting those guys on board, super important as well.
How do you navigate that? I mean, most even in companies, big companies, they're siloed. How are you able to holistically hold all these people, the strength and conditioning, their nutritionist, you as their corner coach, the cut man?
Yep.
How do you manage that?
Communication. Got to know them. Got to communicate with them. You got to make them understand that they're just as an integral part of this program as you, the coach, as them, right? Like, I always try to build them up. Like, hey, man, you know, this is important. Tag them in all the stuff. Yeah. Make sure they feel a part of every little thing. Mm-hmm. But you have to just understand how to communicate with people, right? Yeah. It's like, strength and conditioning coaches might not understand their particular role. They want to give you a 10 in effort. Mm-hmm. They want to give you a 10 in effort, but sometimes that 10 in effort can hamper what you're trying to accomplish that day for camp.
Yeah.
So what I always love is I'll bring the strength and conditioning coach in to watch our practice.
Wow.
Hey man, I need you to come into a Monday practice so you can see what we do.
Yeah.
And then they get done and like, hey, here's our HRV. Here's his heart rate. Here's what we did. This, here's what this. And they're like, oh shit. Like that was a crazy session. Yeah. So they understand, right? Yeah. So I can't, when you lay your schedule out, I always tell guys to rate the session to difficulty, 1 through 10.
Yeah.
Okay, this session is a 3, this session is a 10, this session is a this. Mm-hmm. Okay? But if you tell them a max day is 25 points, then you're sitting at a 30 for 3 days in a row, we're going to burn ourselves out.
Right.
Right? So you have to understand where strength and conditioning coach, your 10 is going to be on a Wednesday. These days here, I need you to be a 3, but I'm gonna give you your day.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to give you your day to get after this guy. Okay, great, coach. Boom. Now we're communicating. They understand the plan. But that's what I feel like a lot of people fail in, even the corporate world. Mm-hmm. The guys at the higher ups don't tell the rest of the people of what the plan is. Mm-hmm. What's the plan? What's the game plan?
Yeah.
What's the approach? Yeah. When you feel a part of something, right? Self-accusation, you feel a part of the company, you feel a part of the program, then everybody's doing what?
Yeah.
Rowing the boat in the same direction.
And I think there's conviction. So 100%. I'm running this through because you're explaining something so beautiful. I have a few sales guys and they get people in, boom, we train them, they change lives.
Yeah.
They had like a week slump or a month slump where they're unable to just like, and I'm listening to their phone calls.
Right.
There's no soul in it. There's no conviction in it.
They lost a couple.
Yeah. Right. They lost a couple. And then I'm like, hold on. I need to replay this back. Mm-hmm. So I brought both of the teams together. It's like, hey, this is Susan.
Right.
She lost 30 pounds. You know, she did this for her daughter. And by the way, she continues to do this because of X, Y, and Z. And I did like 10 of them. It was like just to build the conviction. They didn't realize that when they were coming in, they were helping all these people. Mm-hmm. And then the next week, they go in and smash it. Mm-hmm. They smash the calls. Their tonality sounds different.
Right.
So the whole, like, that is like the biggest thing. Can they see the whole final product as a whole? Because I think your coaches and your other teammates will have a greater conviction. Mm-hmm. Just the whole result is just so much more purposeful, I feel like.
Right. Enjoy the process more than the product alone.
Yeah.
Right? Because the end product can change.
Yeah.
We won a world title and the first thing we looked at each other like, okay, now what? Like you didn't hit the finish line, right? So Susan, for example, she lost her 30 pounds. Now what? Right? Mm-hmm. Do you quit? You done? No, now I want to do this. So those are just like roadmaps or markers that you hit, and then it's on to the next and continue on to the next. So it's an infinite game, right? It's not a finite one. You don't boom and it's over. The game's not over when the clock runs out.
Yeah.
So I love like the New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, right? I get that a lot.
Well, I love that because it's like, why put a timeline on it? Like why, like, so you didn't hit it in a year or maybe you accomplished it in 3 months.
Yeah.
Right. So your goals have to be ever changing constantly. Yeah. So don't put like a timeline on it, right? It's always a New Year's resolution. No, every day you should have a set of goals to accomplish for the day, right? Mm-hmm. Then for the week, then for the month, then a 3 month, a 6 month, and a 1 year, and run that roadmap of stuff. And then next thing you know, shit, you're tackling all this stuff.
It's always changing.
Always changing.
That was like a big thing. If your client doesn't have a goal, you're just cheerleading at that point. Right. And it's one of the most draining things for me.
You're on the hamster wheel.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, you got to have a goal. Yeah. Like, give me something, even if it's just like sustaining your level of stress. Give me something.
Right.
So you get an athlete to win something.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next? Do you just you celebrate that for a little bit, or do you're like, all right, what's the next big thing we're trying to accomplish here?
I love it, bro, because I tell guys, you get one day to celebrate, you get one day to pout.
Okay.
That's it, man. And then I know that's more for me.
Yeah.
As it from a coach, because I'm so active that I have to be on my A game come Monday.
Yeah.
You can't roll in too high off the win, because then you start thinking, oh, well, I can just show up and this and that, right? And you can roll in too low off of a loss, and that can have an effect on the next group of fighters.
Yeah.
So I tell people all the time, man, never too high, never too low, just because of the way that this game goes, it's so fast now. And before, I mean, you get a pay-per-view once a month, maybe. Maybe a fight or two a month. It's every weekend.
Yeah.
And we got guys on every damn card.
Mm-hmm.
So the hard part about it is that for the fighter, he might only fight 3 times in that year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take a little bit more for him
to
get over that win or loss or her.
Yeah.
But for as a coach, as a leader, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough because you still like, you don't get time to grieve.
Mm-hmm.
The wins, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, like what Tim Grover always say, like, it doesn't care. Wins don't care about you. You might have won 100 in a row, but you always have to have the same mentality.
Excellent. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I think for me, the losses resonate a little bit more, man, because like cliche, everybody hates to lose, right?
Yeah.
But here's what I tell a lot of my athletes. I even told my daughter this just recently. Don't get comfortable with losing.
Mm-hmm.
What do I mean by that? You see guys now and they lose a fight. Hey, coach, we want to hit the after party. We got to get some drinks.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't. There's nothing to celebrate, bro.
Yeah.
We lost. What are we going out to get drinks for? Like, I want to go back and see what we did wrong. Great. Like it hurts my soul to see us lose a fight, especially like a split decision loss like Sean had.
Yeah.
Right? I just wanted to figure out what we did wrong and how do we go back and become better? You know, I don't want to celebrate a loss at all.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know, man. Like, I'm obsessed with this stuff. I have a really, really great resource in a friend of mine who is a tier 1 operator.
Mm-hmm.
And I love talking to him about this kind of stuff because he did it at the level of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
We're not at the level of life and death, but you can draw so much inspiration from people at that level because it puts things in perspective for you.
Yeah.
You know, and I was talking to my good friend about this after Sean lost.
Yeah.
And he's like, how do you feel? How you feeling, bro? I'm like, bro, it's on to the next. I got this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, like, it reminds me of when we went out on an operation. One of our guys got shot up. But we had to go out the next day and operate. Jeez. Right?
Yeah.
But think about that level of what these guys experience versus what we have.
Yeah.
Your buddy got shot up, but you have to get a clear mind and clear conscience and be on your best A game because you're going out again the next night.
Yeah.
So I start thinking about the way these guys operate, these guys are. You could always draw inspirations from people in all different fields, all different walk of lives. Now, I understand it's not life or death, but you have to have somewhat of that same mentality.
I love that.
Yeah.
And that's how you leverage comparison. I think people get all sad and annoyed and like, don't compare yourself. It like destroys your happiness. But you can compare someone's other life and you can draw almost inspiration and collaboration from it. And then it puts things in perspective.
100%. What are people doing at the highest level? Yeah. I don't care if it's real estate. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's swimming, you know, tier one operators, weightlifters. You're like Flex Lewis and I are like best friends.
Yeah.
Right? But I go and hang around Flex and I just watch this dude work and think about what he's getting into podcasting. He's doing this. He's doing this. How he runs his business.
Yeah.
Our demographics are kind of the same.
Mm-hmm.
But be around people that meet your level or raise it.
Yeah.
Right? And when I get around a guy like Flex, oh, dude, that dude raises my level.
Yeah.
But he challenges you too. Yeah. Right? But it puts you in a situation to where, man, like if you're running a race and you're running with people that are faster than you, it's going to make you run faster.
I think success is contagious. Greatness is 100%. Contagious. And you're 100%. Just like, what am I doing? I need to step my game up.
Dude, you nailed it.
Yeah.
And not only that, surround yourself with people that are cheering for your successes, that are generally happy to see you win. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. To see you win. And that's the thing I tell guys all the time. Success is not finite. It's infinite. There's enough to go around for everybody.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not they're going to run out of success at the store. Like, dude, sorry, we're all out.
Yeah.
There's plenty to go. So why not put that out in the universe for your closest people around you and cheer on their or be happy for their successes and cheer on for their successes.
Yeah.
And I found that for me, once I started to kind of have that outlook, what happened? It opened my heart and mind for success to find me as well.
And it just shows that's why you have 40 professionals, because there's plenty of success to go around.
Tons.
I was watching a video. I did like 3 hours on you, by the way. I feel weird just watching that much film. But you know, I think that's the advantage of just one. It's an advantage and disadvantage. You can watch a lot of people.
Right.
But I wrote one thing down, and it's probably something that not a lot of people would write down. But then there was a particular fight where one of your clients or one of your athletes was getting booed. And you got that information. And you took that information and you turned it into power.
Yeah.
And you said, when they're booing louder, you're actually winning.
Correct.
And I love that, because I tell my guys, like my athletes that are losing weight, they're cutting weight for a deficit because they're just not eating enough carbs. There's going to be a moment where you're going to want to crave everything.
Right.
And a lot of times people think they're losing, but you're losing a ton of body fat and you need to go through that. The best coaches, this is why it makes you great. You can take information, you not only make it neutral.
Right.
You use it as power.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so subtle, but that's what makes you amazing. I was like, done. I have to write this down. This guy is turning circumstances into a weapon.
Yeah.
Adversities into a weapon. Do you know that about you? You do that?
I do. I am wildly optimistic and positive at every turn.
Yeah.
Like, I try to find the best out of every situation. And that particular situation with Chris Curtis.
Yeah.
We're in Canada, right? And I know we're fighting a Canadian guy. Mm-hmm. So to me, the boos are cheers, man. Like, they're not booing you or your performance. They're booing because their guy is not winning. And that's what we want. Like, I'll tell guys all the time, if they're booing, we're winning, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm happy for that. But again, perspective for me is everything. Is everything, because we can find the positive in even the worst situations. I promise you.
Mm-hmm.
And time again, I'm able to kind of navigate through depression, or you don't feel good about your anxiety.
Yes.
With your perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, when I think for everybody on the level playing field was COVID. Everyone in the world was affected by COVID.
Yeah.
Right? But what did people do? They either
got stronger, destroyed by it.
Now, again, there was, it's a touchy subject because people lost their lives and, you know, people, but the normal Joes, right? The ones that were just, okay, well, what now? People got into podcasting. Mm-hmm. People got into writing music, learned how to skateboard, right? We had options to get better in certain areas, or you can curl up and die. And pout about it. Woe is me, right? So we had the opportunity to go and take the key to the gym.
Yeah.
Get the best guys in the world, mm-hmm. lock the doors, and train every day,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
During that time, we took that negative, was able to find the positive out of it, and we came out of COVID
yeah.
with world titles.
Wow.
With world titles because of, hey, guys, I know it sucks. I know there's no toilet paper.
Yeah.
But guess what? We're going to train today.
That is incredible.
You know? So we'll find ways to get better.
This is why probably Joe connected us, because I'm like overly optimistic, which has its advantages
yes.
and disadvantages.
100%.
One of my big frustrations, because I have 20 coaches and you have a decent amount of coaches as well, and I would always complain to my wife. And I'm the only one that complains to her.
Right.
Everything else, I don't complain.
Right.
Because the best way to complain is make something better.
Exactly.
Right? So the coaching side of it,
uh-huh.
I wanted coaches to be better.
Right.
You know, just yeah. be prolific, be obsessed. And unfortunately, I can't have one-on-ones with 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why don't you just do one to many?
Right.
Just go find the best coaches.
Right.
And if you can't make them, you should attract them.
100%.
And this was like one of the things for me. This is like the biggest thing for me is there's, I don't know, the coaching industry, it could be crazy. I think it's like it went up 62%
mm-hmm.
because there's different industries. There was the industrial age. There was the farming age. Now there's the information age, mm-hmm. which is what we see. But then we can't just take that information and then just like whatever. There's a lot of coaches that need to distill that information and then make that information effective for the person that's right in front of them.
100%. Yeah.
So that's in the space that I'm in right now. And I'm like, how do you get those coaches that you have to be able to be just as impactful as you are?
Ah, oh, man, it's interesting because there's some guys in the room that I feel like, I wouldn't say they don't want it as much as you might,
mm-hmm.
but their motives might be different.
Yeah.
Right? Their motives might be different. Their intentions might be different.
Yeah.
And I can't make them want it more than me.
Right.
I know how much I want it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want good things for all of my coaches in the gym.
Yeah.
So it does get frustrating in a lot of ways because you see like their workload or the effort that they put in with certain things. It's like, man, mm-hmm. how come you can't be here 10 minutes earlier?
Yeah.
Or on time for that matter? How come you can't make sure that the students aren't wearing the proper gear, right? Mm-hmm. All these little things, and we call them crumbs. Mm-hmm. You're just constantly leaving crumbs behind.
Yeah.
Clear your plate, man. Like if you're going to do it at the highest level, the highest capacity. Don't walk away from something and go, well, I kind of did it. You know, that was cool. Yeah. If we're going to do it, let's do it great, mm-hmm. right? And I got to the point where I started to not like make excuses for them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, you know what, dude? I'm going to run hard and I'm going to run fast. And if you guys can keep up, great, because I like to run in a pack. But if not, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm just going to go get people that can stay with us.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm unapologetic about it, to be honest with you, because I don't have time for it anymore.
I've had that same conversation with my coaches.
Yep.
And dude, you're going to love this because I interviewed Deborah March, which is a mayor mm-hmm. for Henderson.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we talked about like different levels of leading 1 to 3, 3 to 30, 30 to 3,000. And from 1 to 3, it was just if you improve yourself, you're going to get 3 leaders
100%.
Just naturally.
100%.
And then from 3 to 30, you have to like pick your 7. Give that 7 as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Those 7 are going to run really, really fast with mm-hmm. you. And then what was really cool was the 3,000 where it changed.
Right.
It's like 3,000 is different or 325,000 is different.
Right.
So in the politic world, it's like 56%, 57% is a landslide victory.
Right.
So that means 40% or 50% dislike you.
Right.
And what she said was, you have to change the relationship with that. You know, you're running really, really high and you're doing really, really good when 50% of them no longer see your vision,
right.
no longer agree with you. And that's I was crazy. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
You're about to hit that stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me because I think that like, they're just with guys, certain guys in the room, you know, I want them to feel what it feels like to win a world title.
Right.
I want them to feel what it feels like to make that huge payday.
Yeah.
Right. I want that for them, you know, but sometimes they don't want it for themselves and I can't, I can't like dwell on it because I just don't have the time anymore.
Yeah.
But what I can do is lead by example, right? There's not a toilet I haven't plunged. I mop the mats every day. I do everything as I would when I was a day one guy at Extreme Couture and versus coach of the year. I don't care, right? My mentality stayed the same because I'm just going to lead by example. It's not below me. It's not above me. I'll just do it.
Yeah.
But what happens when you see, you know, coach mopping the mats? What does it incite?
Yeah.
People go, hey, I can mop the mats too. Coach can do it. I can do it. Or, hey, coach, let me grab that bucket. Let me mop the mat for you. You know what I mean? Let me get that done. So for me now, I'm just like, yo, either keep up or get out of the way because I'm going to keep going and doing my thing.
Yeah. So you're a huge lead by example guy.
100%. 100%.
I mean, yeah. That's like one of my superpowers. I was like, okay, if I don't do this and I'm telling them to do it, how can I expect them to even
believe in it?
Do that?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I look at guys too that are like insanely out of shape.
Yeah.
You know, and coaching, and it's like, man, like, how do you get yourself that way? And I don't even just limitate. I have like shoulder and neck issues and everything else, but like I always thought of that even in the football. It's like, you know what I mean? Like this guy, how am I supposed to take instructions from this guy, you know?
Yeah.
He looks like shit.
So one of my things and what our values is like the greater your courage, the more people you can encourage. Mm-hmm. And if you're taking courageous action in your own body, you're going to be able to encourage people without even saying a word.
100%. Yeah, it's your business card.
Yeah, or if you're cleaning and mopping the floor with a smile and you're fist bumping people as they're coming into the door, that's also a form of courage.
Yeah.
And when you say someone, "Hey, I need you to do X, Y, and Z,"
they're like, "They have no problem doing it." Yeah, 100%.
And that's like one of the power things that I think some of the greatest coaches have.
Right.
Is their own courageous action.
Yeah.
So that's why I do it. I wanted to highlight that.
Yeah. Same. I know that I don't want to plunge that toilet.
Yeah.
I know I don't want to do it myself.
Especially if you have a bunch of dudes doing it.
Yeah. But I know that I also don't want my young girl that work in the front desk to have to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's delegated to her. Oh, this is your job. You know what, dude? I'm just going to bite the bullet and get this one done.
Yeah.
But how much more she's going to want to work for somebody like you?
Yeah.
You know, all right, man, he loves me. He cares about me. He's not going to make me do that job.
Yeah.
So you go out and handle it.
And she might just do it just randomly.
She might just do it because she knows it's not, you know, beneath me to do it.
That's so good. Okay. So I want to talk about balance.
Sure.
We just had a prior conversation on this.
Yeah.
Because you're not like, I mean, I'm in situations where I have to work on the weekends where there's these things. And by the way, I'm going to be super transparent. Me and my wife had some massive arguments this.
Oh,
right. Yeah. And she was like, she's going through Instagram. Why can't you be like this guy? Why can't you be like that guy? And I was like, why don't you just go marry him?
Right.
Right. Just marry him.
Yeah.
You know, and it got to a point and then we had that conversation and I was like, listen, this is the season that I'm in my life. I want to include you as much as I possibly can. I'm going to be the best father, I'm going to be the best husband, but I love what I do.
Mm.
And at some point, yes, we're going to have some balance and stability, but I love this.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we include us together in this process?
Right.
Because it's not going to be like this. Like, I just don't see it happening for the rest of my life. I want to include you in these experiences. This is crazy. How do you manage that? Or you're like, oh, this is a constant. This is my MMA battle.
No, man. And I love it. I love that you brought this up because it is very, very important, I think, for all of us to understand that, man, like my wife allows me the opportunity to be able to do what I do at the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that she doesn't take a lot of wear and tear herself. You know, we have three kids and it's a constant, you know, kids got soccer, this kid's got football, this kid's got dance and running around and handling all that stuff. Meanwhile, dad is in Saudi Arabia, right? Or dad's over here, dad's doing that.
Yeah.
The balance thing to me is never finished. It's never done. You never really master it.
Yeah.
It's a constant daily battle of trying to find homeostasis between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy Atlas, the first time I ever met Teddy Atlas.
Okay.
The first thing he ever said to me, right? This is a guy who I look up to, who I think is mm-hmm. one of the best boxing coaches, but just a legend yeah. in his own right. Never said anything to me about a boxing technique.
Mm-hmm.
He said, how many guys are you coaching right now?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, like 20 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He's like, cut that in half. Too many.
Wow. Okay.
Right. And I was like, okay. Like, you know, and he goes, how many kids? Like, we start going on the yeah. stuff. And here's what he said to me. And this really resonated with me. He said, every morning you get up and you get one cup of water, mm-hmm. right? That's your time. That's your 24 hours in the day.
Yeah.
Now, what's important to you in your life? What are your main things? You have your gym, your family, your faith, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are empty cups.
Mm-hmm.
And those cups command a certain amount of water every day.
Yes.
But you're over here and you're dumping all your water into in MMA.
Things. Yeah. Okay.
How much water are you putting in the family? How much water are you putting in the faith or your finances or this or yourself?
Mm-hmm.
All these things. And he goes, I want you to limit the cups that need time, right? But I also want you to try to find, and this is like the first thing this dude ever said to me.
Wow.
And we're going on, and not only that did he do that, then he gave me his own life experiences. He mm-hmm. talked about when he coached Michael Mora,
mm-hmm.
when he had this, when his son was this, and this, and this, and this. And I left that conversation so enlightened that it really changed me, not as a coach, but the dad and the husband that I was that day. So I started to look at that more and more. Well, how can I include my wife on these things?
Mm-hmm.
It might cost me a little bit extra money, but I'm like, hey, do you want to come to Ireland with me? Can you make it to Mexico City with me? Can you come on this trip with me? So now not only are you spending more time with your significant other, but she also gets to see what the road life is like.
Yes.
Right? It's not all partying and hanging out and just kicking with the boys.
Yes, it's stressful sometimes.
It's actually work.
Yeah.
It's actually work. Now, when you have a companion who helps motivate and push and she's your support system,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't become a liability, right? Sometimes you might bring somebody on the road that's like, oh, dude, this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
But for my circumstance with my wife, we're high school sweethearts. We've been together forever.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody knows me, it's her.
Yeah.
If anybody knows that I'm not putting enough time in, she has no problem telling me. Mm-hmm. If anybody knows my worth, it's her. She's going to tell me, like, hey, you're undercharging or you're doing this or you're doing that.
Yeah.
But be open for the conversation of criticism.
Yes.
Right? There's a saying that I love you too much to leave you the way that you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. People are so afraid to tell you something that they feel to make you better because it might hurt your feelings on the front end.
Yes.
It might hurt your feelings on the front end. Yeah. So I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
But really, if you're the person receiving that information, those are the types of people you want to have around you.
Yes.
Because what are they trying to make you?
Better.
Better.
Yeah.
But we're so afraid of hurting somebody's feelings, man.
Oh my gosh. You know?
So I love the fact that I have resources like my wife that help me with balance. And you might hear something that you didn't want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, you're being a bad dad. You're not here enough. You're not doing this enough. And you're like, oh, what happens to your ego?
Yeah.
And then you're like, you know what, man? Take a step back and listen and understand what they're trying to, you know, the information they're trying to give you.
Mm-hmm.
It's only because they love you, right? And they're only trying to make you better. So, you know what? The balance thing for me has been one-on-one dates with the kids.
Wow.
So pick a night. McKenna, let's go. Where do you want to go to dinner? Let's go grab sushi. Just me and her.
Mm-hmm.
How's it going? Hey, turn your phone off. This is for me and you for this hour.
Beautiful.
Great. Love it. Avery, where do you want to go to dinner? What do you want to do today? You know, let's go do this. Little man, I'm with him all the time, you know? Right. But disconnecting, because if I sat here this whole time and I just had my phone in my hand,
and you're just texting and we're doing
maybe it. I'm not even texting, but do you feel like I'm engaged with you right
not
now?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Right? Yeah. We do team dinners with all the boys.
Yeah.
Your phones go in the middle.
Yeah.
You touch your phone, you're buying.
Wow.
This is the only time that I'm asking for all of us to be connected, to be together.
Powerful.
Is the team dinner.
Yeah.
Right? So funny story, we're in Canada. Mm-hmm. I bring my wife. My wife's sitting to my right. Chris Curtis across from me, the whole team, big table. Mm-hmm. This is the time that I love the most, is the bonding, the team, the camaraderie, the boys, the girls, whatever. And we have this magician that comes up to the table. It's a really nice, fancy restaurant too. Mm-hmm. Kind of out of place, right? The meal, before the meal starts, we all sit down and we're getting whatever. And the magician guy does a little card trick here or there. Cool, whatever, bro. Mm-hmm. Then the food comes out. Yep. And I'm having a conversation with Chris Curtis about his career.
Yes.
And like this guy's ups and downs and where he's at, just how proud. And like, I'm in this, like me and you talking right now.
Yeah.
And guess the magician comes rolling up for act two.
Yeah.
I never break eye contact with Chris.
Yeah.
I go, get the F out of here.
Yeah.
This is my moment with my guy.
Yeah.
I go, we're having a family dinner. Yeah. I never even looked at this poor kid.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I said, this time is for us. And I care about this moment more than I even care about the fight itself.
Yeah.
Right? It's that 300 movie before they go out, they have their meals and they spend time with their family and they go to war.
I love
this. Right? This is my time right now.
Yeah.
And the poor kid is just scurried out of the way. But you know, those are the things that like for me, like I want my wife to understand.
Yes.
And how do you make her feel like a part of it? Bring her. That's hey, come so to the good. Gym. I want you to see what I do on a day-to-day basis. Yes. When she sees me coach, oh.
He's in.
He's in. Mm-hmm. He's so passionate about it. Mm-hmm. He loves it. He loves it more than this, and this, and that. So I understand why he spends so much time, right? Now, I'll give you one other thing for this. Mm-hmm. When your fighter appreciates the time that you put in with them just as much as anybody else, that's when the family gets behind that athlete.
Yes.
It doesn't turn into this fighter takes my daddy away. Mm-hmm. This fighter cares for my daddy. And like Francis, for example, during COVID, he became part of my family.
My gosh.
So when we won the title, me and Francis didn't win the title. Francis didn't win the title. The team didn't win the title. The family won the title. And that's when it's the most beautiful.
Yeah.
When the athlete genuinely cares not only about their coach, but the family that they are depriving time from, taking away from, that they care.
I feel like these guys have to replay what you just did there. That was a masterclass. And I'm going to distill some of them really fast because I think that was just the most beautiful thing I've heard. And I've learned what you've learned like a year ago. A mark of a master coach deletes things. You've deleted so much. Like, it's not about to-dos. It's like, what am I going to delete for this to actually work?
Right.
I'm not going to do this, this, and this, and this to ensure that I have time with my kids.
Right.
I have time with my wife, and I have undivided time with my athletes. A mark of deletion in as a coach is one of the most important like levels, at least I think, to be a master of what you do.
Right.
You're just removing things.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. But removing the fluff.
The fluff, yeah.
The fluff.
The fat.
And bro, like, well, I do some guest speaking at UNLV, and I go to, like, School of Business, right? Yeah. And the funny thing, we'll always do this exercise. Goal you're working on, something you're trying to accomplish, or I just don't have enough time. I just can't get this done, or blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Take out your phone.
Yeah.
Open up your screen time. Tell me how much time you spend on Instagram.
It's like 4 hours.
4 hours in a day.
Yeah.
Right? So don't tell me it's that important to you when it's you're making excuses for you just don't really want it that bad.
Yes.
Right? You don't really want it that bad. You want to tell yourself that it's important to you because it sounds right. It sounds good.
Yes.
But if you really wanted it that bad, you would exhaust every option to make that happen.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah.
And what do they do? They're like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And then, again, a sign of a good coach. Good coaching doesn't feel good all the time. If you want to feel good, there was a quote. It was like, if you want to feel good, go get ice cream. But if you want to be coached to do better, find a good coach that's going to tell you the truth. And it's not going to feel great all the time.
Right? And how many times, for you, I tell guys all the time, when I jump their shit, if I ever stop talking to you, then I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
But I know what I'm telling you right now is tough love and it hurts. Mm-hmm. And I'm yelling at you and I'm making you feel like a piece in front of all the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. But the moment I stop talking to you, I stop caring.
Yeah.
I don't care about whatever. Show up late, dude.
Yeah.
I don't give two craps about that.
Yeah.
At all.
I think hard conversations are like the gateway to have greater connections.
Yep.
And then anytime you have those with your people, you either break up or you have this massive breakthrough,
And then sometimes those breakups are, thank God.
Like, yeah, that's good too.
Right? Like, all right. Yeah. And then you remove that energy out of your way to open up more space for people that are like, oh, dude, I'm here. I'm ready to work.
Yeah.
You know? You need to probably end up making more money off this person later on down the line, you know, or more, an actually good relationship with somebody that you want to put time in. So here's a saying that I have. Mm-hmm. I have get to's and I have got to's.
Yes.
Okay. I get to coach Dan Ige.
Yeah.
I got to go coach this person.
Yeah.
Eliminate the got to's.
Right.
The get to's are like, dude, I can't wait to go work with Paul Felder or Jeremy or this guy, right, or whoever it may be. Because I get to. That's a privilege. That's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? The got to's are, all right, I got to show up at 3:00 to do this, you know?
Yeah.
You don't want to do the got to's. That's part of like making a living, or I have to show up. I got to go to jury duty.
Yeah.
You ever hear anybody say I get to go to jury duty?
Yeah.
No. I got to go.
I wish I would have had that my first 5 years.
Right.
Because now I get to choose.
Right.
I think you're in this state where you get to choose everyone that comes in.
Well, what are got to's though?
At least my got to's were like I feel bad, but it was like the soccer moms or right. just.
But got to's are what though? They're reps.
That's true.
Yeah. They're reps.
Yeah.
So how do you fine tune your get to's? You have to have some got to's.
Yeah.
And got to's, they help pay the bills. They might be a situation for you to bridge the gap between A and B. Everybody's going to have them. Yeah. But again, it goes about perspective.
Yes.
Well, maybe I can try certain combinations with this person because they're never going to know what I'm working on. Mm-hmm. Right? The soccer mom's not going to know this, or this. But in my head, I want to hold it for repetition on the pads. So maybe I can take it over to my higher level guys because I can use this as like target practice.
Yes.
Right? So they serve a purpose. There's an ecosystem to what they do.
Yeah.
Or have them available. But you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, we're at the level now. It's like they're all get to. Mm-hmm. I get to because I mastered the got to's.
You just reframed. You just reframed information again because we just talked about that. You reframed my got to into reps.
Yep,
reps. And this is what makes you prolific. You're like, okay, this guy's using this to not empower him at all.
Right. Target practice.
Boom. And you're right. Yeah. Like, I don't think I would be at the level that I'm in if I didn't do those got to's.
Right.
So learning how to appreciate those got to's is where probably I'm in now.
Yeah. And you know, like even think about the ecosystem of your gym. Mm-hmm. Okay. You probably have your tier one operators, your highly trained athletes that are in here.
Yeah.
And then you might have, you know, the ones that are just kind of in that second area, the ones that are here and the ones that are here.
Yes.
Right. But for us as an MMA gym, your great white sharks need to have somebody to eat.
Okay.
So those are the people that I try to empower the most. Not the great whites, but the ecosystem of the food.
Yeah.
Because without them, you're going to get great white on great white action, and it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
Right? So the people kind of in the middle that pay your bills, that are the most consistent.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that really empower our entire facility. Or maybe the ones that'll never be a pro fighter. Maybe they'll never be a high level athlete.
Right.
Right? Maybe they're 5-5 as a pro fighter. Mm-hmm. But they're kind of your heart and soul of what you're able to accomplish within your facility.
That's true.
Yep.
I want to say, you're 100%. 99% are just regular people.
Yep.
That come through these doors.
Exactly.
And then there's the 1% that gets all the light.
Right.
But technically they don't pay the bills.
Right.
Right. They'll pay my bills, but they won't pay my employees' bills.
Right. 100%.
So you have to almost appreciate that whole ecosystem. Sometimes you have to cherish them more.
Right.
Just like the others.
Reward them, give them the love. Right. Mm-hmm. Like those are the people when we win a fight that I make sure get tagged in the post. Because without you, they didn't have sparring partners.
That's true, yeah.
So we were able to work and accomplish these goals and find the way to get a win because you gave your blood, sweat, and tears and your time to us as a teammate, right?
Yeah.
I have a guy, Chris Thompson, one of my best guys in the room, my teammate-wise, and he has some pro – I mean, he's good. He's probably a 500 fighter,
yeah.
Right? Got some wins, got some losses. Guy's really, really good, technically good, but he works a job.
Yeah.
But we bring him in all the time to help.
That's awesome.
How do you reward that guy? You look in our locker room, and our lockers are very, very selective to a small group of individuals. If you have a locker, you've made it.
Yeah.
Right? I made sure that dude had a locker. Does Chris Thompson, out of the names in the room, is he the one of the higher level guys? No.
Yeah.
But what he provides for everybody in that room, he's just as an integral part of what we're able to accomplish. So I want him to feel that, hey, bro, we love you, and without you, we're not where we're at.
Mm.
Right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. One of my coaches had to check me on this because I highlighted all of my star players first.
Right.
And there'd be moments where they're sick.
Yeah.
And you need a sub. You need the sixth man. I think when you've watched the Spurs, they had Ginobili.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right off the bench.
He's right off the bench. So it was like we need a sixth man. And you not only need it, you need to celebrate that sixth man. Who is that sixth man in your roster? Because he's also responsible for creating champions.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. And when you make them feel like they're just as important as anybody else in the room, right? That empowers them, right? Abraham Maslow's self-actualization, right? The hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
He feels like he's a part of something. So he's more apt to work harder.
Yes.
But when you start giving him responsibilities that make him feel empowered.
Yeah.
Hey, coach, I need you to run this practice for me today. Me? Really?
He's like, yeah.
Yeah, man, dude, you're my guy. Like, I need you to run this practice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what he's going to do? He's going to go spend time on writing a curriculum. Yeah. He's going to make sure he has it all lined up. He's probably going to be the guy to take best care of that class for you because you empowered him into a position they never thought he would have.
That's so good.
Right?
I love it. Okay, I want to do this random question because I know you're a football player.
Yeah.
And I'm watching Mahomes throw these these side ones.
Yeah.
Right? And in mixed martial arts, there's an art to it.
Uh-huh.
And for me, like I played AAU. The highest level I played was AAU basketball. And you can kind of detect patterns.
Mm.
You can detect patterns on how they cross over. You're like, okay, I know where they're going to go. They're planting their feet. Like, I'm going to go steal the ball now.
Right.
Like how, like all these athletes that you have, they have special movements that they do. How do you not tap into some of those movements and like alter it without, because I feel like it's a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm.
If they're moving a particular way, it's a massive advantage. But then if you try to like pigeonhole them into just like, this is how you throw a jab, this is how you throw a right hook, this is how you throw a kick, whatever. How do you manage that creativity part?
Amazing question.
Yeah.
Amazing question, because there's so many little things that I think you have to delve into. Let's start with anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have Daniel Zohuber who fights next week.
Yes.
He's 6'4" and fights at 155 pounds.
Wow.
Big kid.
Yeah.
Big kid. So what are you going to do with Zohuber that's going to basically put all of his best attributes at the forefront?
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason a dude ever gets inside on you.
Yeah.
So the techniques we're going to work for you is utilizing our length.
Right.
And then when that fails, here's our other options from here on out.
Yeah.
Dan Ige, you like to get inside the pocket and bang, right? So here's our systems that we're going to work to get to our best attribute is your inside game.
Yes.
Right? So, and everybody has kind of a cross-pollination of like the system, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to say the meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
So jab cross.
Right.
Right? When you go to Thanksgiving dinner, what's on the plate?
This is mashed potatoes.
And what? Turkey.
Gravy, turkey, yeah.
There's always going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to have turkey and mash.
Yeah.
But the side dishes, bro, it's crapshoot.
Yeah.
Right? So when mom's making Thanksgiving dinner, there's probably, what, 13, 14 different side dishes?
Yes.
And everybody's plate's going to look different.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be one thing on that plate, turkey, and mash.
Okay.
Then you got string beans, you got this, you got that, you got this. Well, my job as a coach is to prepare all the side dishes and allow wow. you to put what you need on your plate. Wow. Here's options. Mm-hmm. Here's an option if this happens. Here's an option if this happens. Here's an option if we do decide to do this. Where are we at in the fight? What's mm-hmm. the game plan? What type of opponent do we have? Are we trying to run the clock out? Do we need to get a finish? Mm-hmm. Right? Here are all of our options. But the main thing for you as the athlete, because the A in MMA yeah. is art.
Yes.
So you have to maintain your creative control. But you have to understand circumstances and situations.
Yeah.
Right? And you have to be the artist in that position. I'll never right. yell out a combination to you.
Mm-hmm.
Royce, I need a blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Because by the time I think of it, process it, say it to you, you process, that combination is long gone.
Yeah.
But if we train something over and over and over and I say, Royce, read that guy's drift. Which way is he drifting?
Yeah.
Oh, I know what coach is looking for.
Right.
Hey, read his slip. Which way is he slipping? Mm-hmm. Ah, I know what he's looking for. There's probably about 10 things you can do, but I'm looking for one of those 10 things that I present to you when yeah. you see what I call out. Yeah. Now, again, goes back to the artist.
That's okay. so good.
We've left you with everything. I gave you the paint, mm-hmm. right? And here's your canvas. Your picture is going to look a lot different from this person's picture, but understand your situational awareness.
And this is why your athletes are so dangerous, because yeah. you can't predict. You let them paint their canvas. You understand the game so well. And again, you distilled it in a way that I could actually
right.
absorb this, because I've watched MMA, but right. not the way you see it. You've turned it so simple for me to understand.
It's so important to watch yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I tell my guys all the time, go watch yourself from a perspective of another coach.
Wow.
How are we going to beat you?
Yeah.
Be in the other corner. Watch your last three fights. If I'm breaking you down, how are we going to attack you?
Oh my okay. gosh.
That gives me the things we need to work on, mm-hmm. right? I have a lot of good colleagues in this sport.
Yeah.
Other high-level MMA coaches that I consider very good friends.
Yeah.
You know what I do all the time? Hey, coach, what have you done in this position? Hey, if you were to fought Ige on this, what would you have done here? I would have done X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Oh, I didn't think of that.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
I didn't think of that. Okay, yeah. cool. Thank you. Yeah. Use those resources. They're there for a reason. Mm-hmm. But people are so afraid to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because what does it show? Vulnerability?
Yeah.
Right?
So what? Yeah.
I'm one of the best in the world. Yeah. I'm okay calling my boy Tyson up. Yo, Tyson, what are you going to do in this position here? What do you do in this situation? Right? Yeah. Oh, man. Do you think he's going to go and tweet it? Oh, dude, Nixon just called me and asked, what do you do off of this?
Yeah.
What an idiot.
Yeah.
No, dude. Like, we're all just everyone trying to get better day in and day out.
Yeah. So mastery to me is taking 10,000 reps and doing it yourself and experimenting it. Genius is learning from the 9,000 steps of a master and then doing your last 1,000.
Right.
And that is like the biggest thing at the highest level of competition. It's not competition, it's collaboration.
Right, 100%.
And you're collaborating with the best coaches. You're studying their film. There might be books about their work.
Right.
And you leverage it. This is why Eric Nixig is insane.
Appreciate you, brother.
This is what makes you insane. This is what I was like, I'm kind of geeking out on this guy because he gets it. He's collaborating at the highest level. He's extremely curious. He's extremely prolific. Like this is what I want my coaches to see.
I appreciate
how genius you are at your work. And it's like, where did you even like that level of practice is so insane. I think it's probably from your coaching background, and you've had a coaching lifestyle for so long.
Just don't be afraid to ask questions, man. Don't be afraid to show vulnerability. You know, mm-hmm. I had such a fortunate career where I had the best in the world at my fingertips. Ray Sefo, Dennis Davis, Mike Pyle, Randy Couture, just guys I was around.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to be vulnerable in a position where it's like, hey, Ray, I want to learn how to hold pads.
Yeah.
The 6-time world champ K-1 mm-hmm. kickboxer, Ray Sefo, a legend.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, well, I'm afraid to ask him. He's probably just going to say no.
Yeah.
What did he say? No problem, bro. Meet me here Tuesday, Thursday, 10 a.m. You're going to hold pads for me for 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? I can directly look at that position and situation that I was in and tell you, had it not been for Ray, I'm not sitting in this chair. We're not talking about this stuff.
That is incredible. And I think that's like such low-hanging fruit. There was I had a mentor, and he said, I asked him, I was like, how come everyone at the top, they just like want you to hang out with them? There was a guy with a box seat in general. He was like, hey man, what are you doing on Saturday? You want to go to the box seat with me? And I was like, why are you asking me?
Right.
I feel so weird. And I asked my mentor, I was like, why do you think a lot of them do that? He's like, just imagine if you had everything in the world and you got everything, you had everything, what would you do left? And I was like, I just give.
Inspire.
And that's what these guys want to do.
Right.
They want to give back. They want to inspire the next generation. They want to do that because that's what gives them juice now.
Right. Right. And
they want you to experience the same win that you experience.
100%.
There's something that you can't explain.
It's about your circle a lot of times, you know, like when you said, you have everything already you want, but I want to be around people that maybe I inspire, but also inspire me.
Yeah.
You know, that bring good energy, good vibes, whatever. Yes. And I think for us, like a lot of people are so fixated on the final product. And a lot of times the final product is just money.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to earn more money. I want this. I want that. But if you're truly passionate and enjoy whatever the hell that you do and get up, go to work and enjoy going there, the product, the byproduct is usually money.
Yes.
Or the successes that you want. Yeah. Right. But fall in love with the process. Fall in love with, man, I'm dreading going out of town for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Cause I love going to that gym every day. And I enjoy being a part of that process of like climbing and working, you know, and grinding and just seeing the successes that we all have from that, man. But that's for me, just honest to God, the day to days of, you know,
The value of the small.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%.
That's one of the underlining things. If you want all of the valuables that's out there, the money, the fame, you got to have really, really, really have like strong values in yourself.
Yeah.
And the more you stack those on, you're like, dude, I just love the sport.
Yeah.
I love being in there. I love studying. Those values are what's getting you a lot of those things that you have.
Oh, 100%. The standard, right?
The standard.
This is my standard. This is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to waver from that standard. And hell, I want to try to elevate that standard. Or I want to be around people that are going to motivate me to do something even better, right? Or sharpen it or get better in that regard. So, man, I think this is a thing where to be a great coach, you have to be coachable. You have to be coachable. Because once you stop learning and stop expanding, then you kind of run out. That's it, man.
Yeah.
It's time to check out and go find something else to do.
I want to wrap this up because I know you got a lot of stuff. You got to travel to Saudi Arabia soon. But so I want to do this differently. A lot of times I'm just like, hey, what makes a great coach?
Sure.
But I want to do this differently. I want to do this in three parts because I think MMA has three, and I could be wrong. There's stand up, there's wrestling, and then there's BJJ.
Sure.
The ground game. Okay. So for a coach to be dangerous in terms of values, what would those top three values be for a coach to be extremely effective in their sport? They could be a teacher, they could be a leader, they could be an entrepreneur. What are some of those values for you?
As far as the sport or the intricacy of each one?
Just coaching in general. Like, what are the three values for coaching for you that makes a dangerous coach?
I think number one is selflessness.
Wow. Okay.
I think that once we sign up for this, this is a career of servitude, man.
It is.
Really is, bro. Your phone is never off. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like there's coaches and there's trainers, right? I think a trainer is a guy who just does the minimum.
Counts the reps. Yeah.
Watches the clock. You know, but a coach really becomes part of that person's persona, their family, their team. I want to be at a level to my fighters, to my athletes, that they say, I don't want to go to battle without you.
Wow.
I need you to wrap my hands. I need you to be on the road. I need to be able to look at you in between rounds, whatever it may be. I want that vibe with my athletes.
Wow.
But how do you get there? And it's really just time. Yeah. It's reps. You know, I have my 20th pro fight with Dan Ige.
Wow.
Right? 20 pro fights together.
Yeah.
I'm in double digits with most of my athletes now of fights we've had together.
Okay.
So it's an investment.
Okay.
But that investment is going to be really that time, that servitude, man.
Like, okay. So we got selflessness, servitude. Is that combined?
No, I say combine it. Yeah.
Combine. Okay. What's that? Two more.
I would say attentiveness, I think is very important, is understanding your surrounding, understanding what's going on with your athletes.
Yeah.
You know, communication with those athletes. Okay. There's so many different byproducts that you have to be in tune with. There's a family that goes on. There's kids that are there. There's things that you need to understand.
Yeah. There's the crowd booing.
There's every, like, why are you fighting?
Right. The whys.
Who are you? Right. Mm-hmm. Strickland has his own reasons why he fights versus Chris Curtis.
Yeah.
Know your athletes. Know who and what got him into this sport. Mm-hmm. Because there's going to be a moment that you're going to have to understand how to draw it out of them, how to get the best out of them. Yeah. So be attentive to your athlete. Why are you here? What got you into fighting? You know, what motivates you?
Yes.
What are your whys? You know, I think that's a great way to look at it. So what are your whys and mean knowing who and what your athletes are?
Wow.
Yeah.
Give me one more, man. You're just feeding me. I'm thirsty now.
Responsibility. Responsibility. And I think the responsibility side comes to when things don't go your way, right? Accountability, responsibility. I think those things are all a connection.
Yeah.
I think when things don't go right, you always have to look within yourself first. Figure out what you could have done better in that situation to be a better coach, a better friend, a better mentor, a better husband. Take accountability first.
Yes.
I think what happens when you do that is it puts everybody's guard down.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If something goes wrong and I walk in, I'm like, God damn it, Royce.
Yeah.
Why did you?
Yeah.
Well, I look at it as a situation where maybe I didn't train you well enough. Yeah. Maybe I didn't give you the right information that you needed. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could have been a better asset to you and provided you with the right things for you to be successful.
I agree. I think your ability to respond, responsibility, is so key. Some of the best coaches can take circumstances and they respond. They don't react.
Right.
Reacting is like, let's blame it on other people. But then the way you do it is like, hey, listen, I think I did something wrong here. What could I have done better?
How can I have been better for you?
Yeah.
Right? But that line of communication only opens doors for positive communication.
It does.
Other than the finger pointing that you see. But I see that a lot because of you'll see it time and time again with these athletes. They'll lose a fight and their first thing is
they point.
Oh, this guy and this.
Yeah.
You showed up late for 5-10 minutes every practice for 8 weeks.
Yeah.
How many reps do you think you missed out on in an 8-week camp? Mm-hmm. Right? You do the math.
Yeah.
1,000?
Jeez,
you missed out on 1,000 reps because you decided to be late. Mm-hmm. You decided not to do these things. Yeah. Right? So before we start pointing fingers, let's assess here first.
Exactly.
Responsibility, accountability. And I've been a guy where, hey, man, we lost a split decision to Dricus, lost the world title.
Yeah.
Man, I should have been more urgent in the corner. I should have given you certain information. I should have said this better. I apologize. I'll be better next time out. Mm. No, coach, you did tell me those things. I didn't do what I could have done. I should have done this. You know what, man? I love that. Let's be better together.
Powerful.
Right?
That is insane. You gave us so much value. You just did this segment. But to wrap this up, number one, where can we find you? I know you have a bunch of fights lined up.
Yeah.
Right. And is there a website for the couture? I'll put those all on the show.
Yeah. Easiest way to find me is on Instagram. It's probably the thing I'm most active on is Eric_XCMMA.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm pretty much most active on. I have Facebook. I'm never on there. Never look at it. Twitter. You know, I kind of peek at it every once in a while, but definitely more Instagram. And then Extreme Couture, man. That's where we're at.
Okay.
16 years now there in that facility. So it's been a long time, man.
You guys are constantly building champs and I just can't wait to see the other champs that you guys continually.
Yeah. We got some good ones coming up for sure.
Dude.
For sure.
Well, dude, thank you so much for spending time with
us. Absolutely, bro. It's my pleasure. It's an honor.
And I'm pumped for your next fight, which is Francis is coming up.
Zalhuber will be next week. Daniel Zalhuber, Mexico City. And then I'll be out in Saudi with Francis. So Francis versus Anthony Joshua. So keep climbing that ladder, man.
I'm pumped for that.
Me too.
Well, dude, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
And good luck, man. Dude,
thank you. Thanks for having me.